Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. This is your host, Dr. Terry Mason. The show, The Doctor in the House, and it's heard right here every Sunday at this time. From 10 to 11, and we're glad to have you as part of our show, and we've got a great show for you today, as we try to have all the time and try and help us to make better decisions. And I've been listening to a lot of the commentary, good commentary, coming from my predecessor, who was just on the radio, Mr. Ernesto Borges, and others, about what's going on with the what the election means to us. But before I get to that, I want to go ahead and introduce one of my guests today. And I've known, oh my goodness, it's been a while. But Christine, Dr. Christine Wells, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I am like a drum with a hole in it. Can't beat it. That's right. That's right. So we're going to be talking, I assume today we're going to be talking a little about food, Dr. Wells. Is that right?
Well, we're going to talk more about a little bit maybe, but we're going to talk a lot about cold and flu season and prevention in that area.
All right. What was the first thing you said?
Cold and flu season.
I didn't understand that again.
Can you hear me? I said cold and flu season.
Oh, cold and flu season. Okay, I got you. All right, because I'm like, wait a minute, cold and flu season. So, go ahead, Dr. Wells. Let's go and get into the cold and flu season. And you called it a season. Is that because it comes every year?
That's because it becomes every single year, unfortunately.
Now, is it the same virus that's causing it, or does the virus change from year to year?
Well, viruses definitely can change from year to year, and they typically do change from year to year.
Okay. Well, tell me, how did you get involved in doing this kind of work? And we always know that the first Sunday is usually with the traditionally started out with the Cancer Center when early on at the U of I. And now we have at Miles Square, a lot of folks going on, a lot of things going on in Miles Square. And I want to give a shout out to its new director, who we're going to Dr. Kareem, which will be speaking with him. I'm going to try and get him on the air. He's an amazing young man, and we want to really see him do well. But we'll talk about that at one of the other shows when we get Dr. Ron. But go ahead, let's talk about this flu season, and what is it that is the key message for everyone?
Right, so I'll just tell a little bit about myself. I am a family medicine physician. I also practice lifestyle and obesity medicine. And yes, today I'm representing the University of Illinois Cancer Center and Miles Square Health Center. And so, today I just wanted to talk a little bit about the cold and flu season, because I know that we all experience those things at one point or another. I first wanted to just give a little bit of background, if that's okay, and talk about the difference between colds and flu and COVID. And so let's first talk about flu symptoms. Flu symptoms usually include things like fever, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose. Sometimes you can get body aches, you can get headaches, chills, and fatigue. And sometimes people who have the flu can also have vomiting and diarrhea. Cold symptoms, on the other hand, tend to be a little bit milder, and they can still get things like cough, sore throat, a runny or stuffy nose. But colds usually don't result in more serious health problems, where things like the flu and COVID can really cause more serious health concerns. And as we all know, COVID can be a more severe illness, and it's really similar to the flu, and you can get all kinds of symptoms with COVID, like fever, cough, shortness of breath, fatigue, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose. You can get those muscle pains or body aches, headache and vomiting, get diarrhea, and then some common things we remember, like you can get that, you know, loss of taste or smell with COVID that seems to be a little bit more consistent with COVID versus the flu and cold symptoms. And it's the thing is with, you know, COVID and the flu, you really can't tell the difference between them. So most of the time, if you're wondering whether you have the cold or the flu, you have to have a test to confirm the diagnosis. So that's just a little bit of background.
Sure. And so these are blood tests that you would come in and get. And at what period should you do that? And if you're coughing and sneezing, do you want to come into a place to get these tests done, or how should one conduct themselves?
Yeah, well, for the testing, it's typically a nose swab. So you can do a nasal swab to be tested for either the flu or for COVID. There are some tests for the common cold. It can be caused by numerous viruses. There are some viruses you can test for, but we typically don't test for the common cold. But you can get a test for COVID and flu, and again, it's a nasal swab. You know, if you're having mild symptoms, we'll talk later on today about maybe some things you can do and just stay at home. But of course, if you have more significant symptoms and if you have more serious health conditions, then you probably do want to go get checked out.
So what things are some of the keys to understand that, hey, this isn't what I thought it was. It's getting a little more severe. I'm feeling a little sicker. What are those thresholds? What are some of those things that people should be aware of to be able to determine whether or not things are not going the right way?
Yeah, I think one thing to remember is that, because I have patients come in all the time, they've had symptoms for a few days, and they're like, I'm not getting any better. Viral symptoms can last for, you know, from a few days to a couple of weeks. So if you're having mild symptoms, then definitely, again, you can, you know, stay at home, do some things to kind of help you get over that. But if you're having symptoms like, you know, maybe you're having shortness of breath, any sort of significant breathing problems, you need to get those types of things checked out. If you're having lots of vomiting and diarrhea and you can't hold any sort of liquids down, then that might be an opportunity to get checked out, because dehydration can be very significant. So those might be some more reasons that you might want to get checked out sooner rather than later.
Now, does it matter about the age? Should we be concerned more about our children or about the elderly, or, you know, who is that, especially when you start talking about the kinds of complications you're seeing and maybe people not able to keep in enough fluid? What should people do?
So you're definitely going to be more concerned about the very young and older adults. So those are going to be those populations that are going to be at higher risk for having more complications. You know, young children can't keep things down, going to get more easily dehydrated. So those are the people that you definitely want to be getting checked out. And then the same with our older populations, older adults, especially those who have more comorbid conditions are going to be at higher risk. So for those populations, you might want to be a little bit more cautious and maybe get them checked out sooner rather than later, especially if they're having more significant symptoms that don't seem to be going away.
Now, what does comorbid mean?
So comorbid means that you have a, sorry about that, it means that you have a condition like a chronic health condition. Say you have hypertension, you have diabetes, you have asthma or COPD. Having these kind of conditions, you have heart failure, other kind of conditions, which might increase your risk for getting sicker if you have a viral illness that becomes more severe.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. And what can people do to help begin to think about decreasing the opportunity for these viruses to spread? Because they are, and let's talk about how these flu viruses are spread. And so these things will govern many of the ways we should be trying to protect our loved ones and others as we move through this season. So you want to speak a bit about what people can do once they start having symptoms, what should they do if they are continuing with symptoms and coughing and sneezing, what precautions should they do or what things they should be doing or having other people help do in order to lessen the likelihood that these viruses are going to continue to be going unchecked in their household.
Okay. Well, first, let's talk a little bit about how they spread. So both the COVID, flu, and common cold, they can spread by large and small particles that contain the virus. And these particles can be transmitted. They can be spread, basically, when people have the virus and they cough, they sneeze, or they talk. And what happens is when they're coughing, they sneeze, or they talk, these particles can then land on the mouth, on the nose of people who are nearby, and then those people can, and they can also inhale those viral particles into their respiratory tracts. Sometimes when you have, especially when there's settings where there's poor ventilation, those particles can spread even further away. So that's something to think about as well, that it doesn't have to be always close contact if the ventilation is poor in the room.
How do you know that that's the case? What does it mean to have poor ventilation, especially once the weather gets colder? So how do I know that I need to do something about my ventilation?
Well, I think it depends on the type of room you're in. And I think it's going to be, you might not always know that you have poor ventilation. I don't know that you're going to always understand it. First of all, the room feels stuffy, then you might can understand that it's poor ventilation. But I think there are some things that we can do to help with ventilation, like opening windows, having plants in your home, and or in your different spaces, and then also maybe having an air purifier. So it's not always that you might know, but you can definitely use these preventative measures during the cold and flu season and throughout the year as well to help ensure that the spaces that you're in have better ventilation.
Now, what are some of the things that if you've noticed that you're having some symptoms or maybe someone in your family having symptoms? And there's some things you mentioned earlier about what we could do to keep the viruses from spreading from one to the other. But what are some of the things that can be done or should be those things that we get concerned about as these things begin to linger? What's some of the things that, okay, this is a warning sign that maybe you need to do something else? For example, fever. Let's talk about fever.
Yeah, so fever is not necessarily a bad sign. And I know a lot of people get really, really anxious when they hear that word fever. Fever really is telling you that the body is active, it recognizes that there's something going on, and it's working. So fever in and of itself means that the immune system is working. So it's not a negative thing. The things that can be concerning about fever is if they're lasting too long or if the temperature is too high. So for children, typically for children, especially for younger children, children like under two, we want to make sure that their temperatures are typically staying about 100.4 or less. So if their temperature is 99, it's a low grade, there are probably some things that you can do at home to manage that temperature. If their temperature, though, is rising, their temperature is 101 and they're under 2 years old, then you probably want to get them checked out, especially if you've been doing some things at home for a day or two and their temperature isn't coming down. Also with kids, other things though, if they're very lethargic, meaning they're very tired, they don't want to do anything, you can't get them to do anything because they're going to be more tired. But if they're not doing anything, plus combined with a high fever, and if they're not taking any fluids in, then yes, those are times you want to be thinking about that and getting them checked out sooner rather than later. For older kids, adolescents, and adults, the temperature greater than 101 is something that you want to be more cautious about. But if you're able to bring it down with using things at home that we can talk about shortly, then you can watch them. But if that temperature is rising and you can't bring it down, and again, if they're very, very, very tired, or when we think about lethargy, that word, that means they're not really arousable. That's different than just being really tired. Like you can't really arouse them, or they're not really able to keep any liquids down, then that's the time when you definitely want to be getting checked out and maybe more. Or again, back to if they're having breathing issues, those are things that you want to be checking out sooner rather than later.
There are a number of things that people try and get over the counter and things of that nature. What categories of those things are okay to use, or maybe you should use with some caution, or are there some things that you don't do in combination? And if people obviously have underlying disease like asthma, what are some of the, and we'll get to food and stuff in just a little bit, but what are the things they need to think about? And if you have questions for our doctor, please give us a call here at 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690, so you can ask your question directly. Go right ahead, doctor.
Well, the first thing that I would say is when you talk about over-the-counter medications, remember that these things are they don't kill the virus. Most of the time, they're just addressing the symptoms. And so if my own thoughts on how to manage that is you can definitely take over-the-counter medications that are specifically, they have different ones out there that are designed to be for cold and flu. You do have to be careful that you, if you have like high blood pressure, then you want to be mindful that you have to be particular about the ones that you take, because some of the substances in some of these over-the-counter colds and flu medications can actually worsen your blood pressure. So you should be cautious about that and make sure that you talk with your healthcare provider regarding any over-the-counter medications that you're going to take. But again, remember that these medications don't kill the virus. And so they might they're going to help address the symptoms. They themselves also can produce side effects. But if you're feeling really horrible, you can't sleep, then they might be an option. Definitely, you don't want to use them in anyone under 2 years old. You want to make sure that you follow the directions on the package. And again, remember that what they're going to likely do is maybe address some of the symptoms and maybe reduce the length of the days that you're feeling sick. Sometimes, though, and we'll talk about this later, that the most important thing is to do what is going to help support your immune system. That's much better and can really be more effective in helping you to feel better sooner.
Well, Dr. Wills, tell us, how can we do that? What can we do to keep our immune system, our bodies, our own natural Army, Air Force, Marine Corps, and everything else to help fight these things? What else, what can we do before we get, you know, before we start getting sick? And if there are things that you want to mention with regard to food or anything else, just go right ahead. And again, the number, if you want to speak to the doctor, is 773-591-1690 to speak directly to Dr. Wills. Go right ahead, Doctor, with your response.
So one of the things I want to make clear before I talk about some prevention is that antibiotics don't work against viruses. So even if you go and someone gives you an antibiotic, it's not going to help. It might make you feel better. It might make you think that you're feeling better, but it's going to do nothing. Antibiotics only work against bacteria. And again, colds, flu, and COVID are all caused by viruses. So antibiotics will not work against them. And the thing you got to be mindful of is if you take antibiotics when you don't need them, they can cause problems later on because they disrupt how our body really works well. So just, I really want to point that out because I know a lot of people want to take antibiotics when they feel sick, but it's not the appropriate thing to take. And there are some antiviral drugs that you can sometimes take for like flu and for COVID. Again, they can help by lessening the number of days that you have symptoms. But again, thinking about how we can really optimize our immune systems can be really important. And the other thing is, I want to mention this as well, is getting vaccinated is important as well. And so that's something that you want to definitely consider, talk to your healthcare provider about, is the risk and benefits versus getting vaccinated. And most of the time, the benefits outweigh any risk. So just want to put that plug in for vaccinations. In terms of prevention, there are a lot of things that we can do as we see, as we know the cold and flu season, we're in it. But even while we're in it, before we get sick, there are things that we can do. Drink lots of fluids. Mostly water, right? Water should be one of your best friends. So drinking lots of fluids, mostly water, is really, really important. You want to drink half your body weight in water a day, more if you're exercising or have other conditions. Of course, if you're on a water restriction because you have heart failure, those are things to be to take into consideration. But other than that, you want to be making sure that you're getting in plenty of water every day. The other thing is that we don't talk a lot about is rest. Sleeping is really, really important, and most of us don't get enough sleep. But rest is when your body really does its repair mechanisms. It's like the housekeeping functions of the body. And when we're not resting, then the immune system cannot work appropriately. So if you're unable to sleep, then you definitely also need to have that conversation with your healthcare provider about what's preventing you from sleeping and how to help you optimize your sleeping regimen. Because sleeping and getting rest at night, going to bed early, waking up early, getting in at least 7 hours is really, really important. I hope everybody got that extra hour overnight tonight. So definitely sleeping is important. Sipping on warm liquids. When you're feeling ill, that can definitely help as well. And just in general, in terms of prevention, is eating a healthy, balanced diet. So trying to get in lots of fruits and vegetables on a regular basis, that helps our bodies and keep down inflammation. And inflammation is just a big word that really just means that can cause a lot of chaos in our bodies. And when we eat certain foods, they can either cause more inflammation or they some foods can help our bodies fight inflammation. So the more we eat foods like fruits, vegetables, beans, nuts, and seeds, that really helps our body to stay in this place where it's better able to fight off inflammation. And also things called, these foods also have things called antioxidants. And what that just means is when we do certain things, like when we're stressed, when we're not sleeping, when we're not exercising, when we are eating lots of processed foods, fried foods, sugar, high sugar foods, those things can cause these substances called free radicals in our body. And those free radicals, what they do, they basically just cause a lot of chaos in the body, and they can contribute to disease. Well, when we eat lots of fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds, they really help our body to fight off these free radicals that we experience every day, even walking outdoors, you know, and we're exposed to toxins. And so our bodies can be more equipped to fight off things when we prime it every day with these healthy substances to help us be equipped to be able to fight them off. And also when we're resting and exercise, getting in exercise every day can be really important. And it doesn't have to be vigorous. You can just walk around your kitchen, whatever you can engage in at your own fitness level, just staying physically active on a regular basis can be really important.
Let's talk about fever, because people are always concerned about fever. Tell us what fever for children and adults are things which should cause alarm or are just at a certain point part of the flu spectrum or things of that nature. When or if should people get alarmed by a fever?
Yeah, so when fever
different ages.
Right, when fever is last too long or if it's too high. Again, when kids, for younger kids under two, typically if there's fever, if your temperature is greater than 100.4 and it's lasting for a very long time, and as I mentioned earlier, if they're not taking any fluids in, it seems like they're getting dehydrated, then you want to get them checked out. If they're older than any temperature greater than 101, that is also accompanied with things like maybe shortness of breath, or maybe they aren't, again, able to keep any liquids down. You want to get them checked out. One of the things you can do at home, if people have, if their fevers are really low grade, if they're able to keep in fluids, and just sipping on fluids is important. They don't have to take in a lot. When people are sick, they probably don't want to do a lot of different things, but sipping in small amounts of fluids can be very important. So having them sip on fluids can be important. You can have, if they're a kid, you can put a cold towel on their head, or an adult as well, put a cold towel on their head, or have them take a cool bath. Those types of things can really help to pull that temperature down. But again, remember, fever isn't a bad thing if it's low grade. But if it's higher, then you can also do over-the-counter fever reducers. So, and usually follow the instructions on the packaging that is age-appropriate. And of course, again, if the fever is not getting any better and they have other symptoms that are concerning, then you want to get them checked out.
So you are a primary care doctor, is that right?
Yes.
Yes. So you're the kind of doctor that most people should have, especially adults and appropriately families maybe, a person that they have established a relationship with. Can you talk a bit about how important it is to have that opportunity and not just wait and see a doctor for, I don't want to say emergency, but for something a bit more significant than the common things that go on during the day and the week?
Yeah, that is definitely key, Dr. Mason, because I, as a primary care physician, I really look at myself as helping people to prevent disease. And so I know we focus on sometimes a lot of sick care, but really prevention is important. So you want to come in and see your primary care provider on at least a yearly basis, more often if you have a chronic medical condition, like I mentioned earlier, like diabetes or hypertension or any other chronic conditions. But definitely every year you should have just a wellness check, just making sure you're up to date on everything that you need to be up to date on for your age, any screening tests. So it's really important to make sure that you're going to see the doctor for those preventative measures, even if you're not sick.
And there are a number of places that people can go, and we've talked a lot about what Miles Square offers, and really want to continue to emphasize that you don't have to wait to be sick to go and see a provider. You could try to get one scheduled, and maybe you can give us an idea of the array, you know, whether something may be different for women that they need to get checked on, because we talked about breast cancer screening and things of that nature. But what, as we think about families, from the man, the lady, the child, in terms of, you know, developing a habit of getting your children, seeing the fact and getting engaged with a primary care provider as they're growing up?
Yeah, it's when kids are, we definitely see kids more often when they're younger. And it's important to make sure that they're getting in those, what we call well child checks. And health really starts, I was going to say health starts at childhood, but health really starts in the womb. And so definitely when you think about that prenatal period, and when you think about that period of when that child is developing in the womb, that's really when health is starting. And so we want to think about health as starting at that point. And then for our children, it's really important to have them come in at the regularly scheduled well child check, just to make sure they're meeting all their milestones, and also to really help to get our kids started young with healthy behaviors. Sickness doesn't start when we become adults. Sickness starts when kids are children. And if we can help our children to have healthy habits from a young age, we would make a lot of inroads into helping to decrease some of the diseases that we see in adulthood. So really thinking about helping our children to be healthy early on can really, really help us to have more healthy adults.
And things like asthma, you know, we have some people will wait till the asthma gets really kind of bad, or bronchitis, and maybe you can distinguish a bit between the two. But some of these more chronic diseases that we're waiting till something bad happens before we really move out. Can we have a word from you to parents and others in terms of you don't want to wait till you're in the storm before you get an umbrella?
Yeah, that's definitely true. As a physician and also someone who has asthma, that is, and also who had a friend in high school die from asthma, I know that it is very, very, very serious. You definitely want to make sure that if your child has asthma, or if anyone who has asthma, that you're treating that appropriately. Sometimes we get used. Our bodies get used to breathing at a dysfunctional level, and we think it's normal until we get into a crisis. And so it's important to make sure that we have screening tests to check our lung function, to make sure we're being diagnosed correctly, and then to help ensure that we're on the right regimen. And then making sure that we're taking whatever is being prescribed as it's being prescribed, and not necessarily just when we feel bad. And doing things like exercise. Exercise is really important for asthma. Also, nutrition is important for asthma. Some asthmatics, I find that some asthmatics don't vary. I tell them that sometimes having too much dairy in the diet can really cause a lot of inflammation in the airways and can promote more breathing problems. So really having these conversations, making sure you're getting these evaluations, making sure that you are taking your medications as prescribed, and then also making sure that you're doing those lifestyle modifications, maybe avoiding things that might be triggering, and exercising regularly as well.
Dr. Wills, I mean, there are a lot of things that you sort of touched on. And one of them, I always, where are you located in terms of people wanted to call and make an appointment with you? Where were they? Is that possible? Or and do you see everything in the entire spectrum, or only adults or children? Or how does that work?
So I see everyone, children, adults, people from birth to death, basically. So I see all individuals. I do practice lifestyle medicine as well as general primary care. I work at the Miles Square Health Center, and so they can always call 312-996-2000 to schedule an appointment.
You need to give that number again?
It's 312-996-2000.
And they can, should they be worried about, I know Miles Square does a great job, and the people should not be concerned about their insurance status or what that all can be worked out. I think is that a fair statement?
Yes, we are. Muscle Miles Square is a federally qualified health center, and so we see all individuals. So definitely, whether you're insured, underinsured, or not insured at all, it's definitely a place where we could see those individuals.
Now, when they call the number you just gave them, would they give them an address, a clinic near them? Because there's a number of Miles Square clinics. So how would they know which one they could go to? Just call that number?
Yes. Now, if you want to see me, I work at the main site, which is 1220 Wood Street. I also work at the Cicero location. But we have other providers at all different locations. So we have a South Shore location, an Inglewood location. Again, there's the main site. There's the Cicero location. I don't know if anybody's on this call from Rockford. There's a Rockford location. I hope I didn't forget any of them. So definitely they can let you know which location might be closest to you, and then you can schedule an appointment there.
And they shouldn't worry about the financial impact of scheduling an appointment, because they'll have that conversation when they come in, and they'll be working with people to determine how to best manage that. Would that be a fair statement, doctor?
Absolutely.
Because we don't want people... The worst thing you can do is be not so sick and wait because you, for whatever reason, don't think you can come or afford it or this or that, and you get worse. And speaking of that, is there a pharmacy also at the Miles Square Center, or do they need to take their medications to a pharmacy store in order for those to be fulfilled?
Well, I think it depends. There is one of our main location on 1220 Wood Street does have a pharmacy. None of the other locations have a pharmacy at them. But also, I would recommend bringing your medications always to a first visit and your pharmacy information, because even though the main site has a pharmacy, which can be very convenient, if you don't live close to that area, then that might not be always convenient. So you definitely want to be able to have a pharmacy that you can access all the time. And so maybe something in your neighborhood might be more convenient for you.
And could you just talk a bit about food and the relationship to food and our diseases, either exacerbating them, causing them, things of that nature? Because a lot of times we don't make that connection. And obviously being around people that have contagious things like colds and flu are clear. But there are other things that you need to know about in terms of what you can do to stay as healthy as you possibly can, because it's always better than not to have a fire than to wait till you have to put it out.
Yeah, that's so key. And one of the things I want to point out is that we know food is important to culture. And so people definitely have cultural practices that are important, and food is a big part of that. I think one of the things we have to realize is that sometimes culture changes from time to time, and we adopt things that aren't necessarily a part of our original cultures. And unfortunately, in our Western society, we've adopted foods that are not necessarily a part of our original cultures. And also with things like industrialization and the way foods are mass produced, lots of foods nowadays are very highly processed, meaning they have a lot of substances in them, or they're made in ways that make them very unhealthy. And so when we're consuming more of those types of foods, when they're ingested into the body, they contribute to disease over time. So it's really important to think about, how do we take in foods that are minimally processed, foods in their most natural state, because those foods really have nutrients in them. And we're eating more processed foods. They don't have any nutrients in them, and they just contribute to disease. They might taste good, but they don't have anything healthy that our bodies can actually use for good. So it's important that we're taking in those foods that have, you know, like I mentioned earlier, those antioxidants and those anti-inflammatory agents that really help our bodies to be protected against all the invaders that come to attack it on a daily basis. So food is really the fuel that helps keep our organs going. You know, if we're eating a lot of chips, you have to ask yourself, well, what can my brain do with these highly processed foods, sugar and all these other processed foods? It can't do anything but only cause disease. And so it's important. And I'm not saying that we all are going to probably eat something unhealthy from time to time. That's understandable. But really thinking about how our diet on a day-to-day basis is mostly packed with nutritious foods.
And it's important. It's really, really important. And I always like to try and emphasize to our listeners, too, most of us aren't cooking. Many of us are not cooking. And we really do. I mean, one of the things that growing up in a house like I did with family, with, you know, other siblings and what have you, our mother made sure that we had to know how to cook. She had a simple rule. Everybody that eats needs to know how to cook. It's real simple. And that's true. You need to know, and I don't mean warm up, heat, microwave, or that sort of stuff. I'm talking about cook some things from scratch. And you need to understand how to do that so that it will keep you from eating so much processed foods. I don't know if we had any callers, but if we did, I'd apologize if we didn't get. All right. Well, we'll take our caller right now. Caller, you're on the air with your question. Go right ahead.
Hi, Dr. Mason and guests. This is Sandra. I was calling to ask, what is the far end of the season for getting a flu shot? The deadline or the far end of the season for getting a flu vaccine?
So we typically start getting flu vaccines in September, and you probably can get a flu vaccine all the way through March or April.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Thank you so much for the call. Any other callers? Because we want to make sure we get them. Okay, it's really, really important. And I know we put out a bunch of information. And when you have children, when you have children, Dr. Wells, at different ages and as they're growing, how do you as a family manage the appropriate potential medical needs and exposures to bringing those children to the doctor? Not necessarily when they're sick, but to begin to start a habit, particularly. And I'll give you one example, young girls, when they start menstruating or whatever signals ought to be. Obviously, if they're asthmatic, they're going to be already probably seeing somebody. But what are some of the other things that we should be doing with our children to get them ready for this?
Yeah, I think the major thing is just bringing them in on a regular basis. When they're younger, they're going to be seen more often, so making sure that you understand what that schedule is like. After 2 years old, they're going to be seen yearly. So you definitely want to make sure that your kids are coming in for a yearly checkup. And then I would suggest writing down your questions, your any concerns, anything that's going on, and taking that in with you. Now, you may not be able to address it all in one visit, so understand that you might need to come back for a secondary visit to address more of those concerns or issues, but definitely having those conversations with your healthcare provider is important.
Well, that's critical, and that's why I wanted to make sure we made that point. And, you know, some of us take better care of our cars than our bodies, you know, but you don't want to wait till you got bad things happening to you. You wouldn't wait till smoke was coming out the tailpipe of your car to go in and get it checked out, or the fact that it couldn't start it. So you want to make sure that you take that same kind of care of your body. Develop a relationship with the primary care doc, somebody that gets to know you so that you're not a stranger to them and they're not a stranger to you. And that relationship can be very, very helpful. And unfortunately, a lot of times in our communities, we don't have these, but where we have the Mile Square Health Centers, you can go and develop that relationship and should develop that relationship with the primary care doctor so that you can feel comfortable when there's an issue, maybe not serious, but you can feel comfortable going to see that person. Well, we've talked about a lot of things, Doc, and you sort of hit all of the different places we needed to go. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, let me just give, I know we're winding down here. I just wanted to give a few simple tips that people can take to really also keep themselves healthy during this cold and flu season. A couple of things I would say is if you don't have a Cool Mist vaporizer or a humidifier, invest in one of those and use that on a regular basis. Just make sure that you change the water in those machines daily because it can really get dust particles can settle in there. And if it gets if your mist is a little weak, add a little salt. Honey and lemon are really good things to use, especially if you have a sore throat. Vitamin C is really important, and vitamin D. A lot of us are deficient in vitamin D, so having vitamin D on a regular basis, get your levels checked, take a vitamin D supplement, talk to your healthcare provider about it, can be important. Things like elderberry. Elderberry is high in vitamin C, fiber, and that word antioxidants, like I mentioned earlier. So elderberry is really good. Just try to get some elderberry that doesn't have added sugars. Eucalyptus. My patients with asthma and anyone, eucalyptus is really good. It has antiviral, antibacterial properties. It can help improve the immune system, can really help with congestion. It can help with breathing. So doing a little bit of like steam inhalation with eucalyptus, I would have my patients who have COVID or have lots of congestion do that. So eucalyptus is really good. Zinc is important too, but be careful. Don't use it in the nose because of potential side effects. Echinacea is something else that people can take, and turmeric. I love turmeric. It has antioxidant properties, and that means, again, that it protects the body from those free radicals, and it also has antiviral properties. Garlic is also very good, ginger, and you can also do sore throat lozenges. So those are just some things that I wanted to throw out there as things that people can take. But of course, remember that food, exercise, and sleep are most important. And these are other things that you can add for specific things, but really focus on those lifestyle modifications first.
Well, time is winding down, and we want to make sure that if you have a question, you get it in so you can get it asked. And she just gave you a bunch of different things, and those things come in different sizes and different ways, and you mentioned vitamin D. Should they just get the regular vitamin D or vitamin D3, or what should people get? Because you can get these things over the counter.
Yeah, you can get vitamin D3. You can get vitamin D2. Definitely, I know that there are a lot of high doses out there. So I usually just recommend that patients take maybe about 2,000 units, international units a day. But I definitely recommend getting your levels checked at least once. And if you're deficient, then you're going to need a supplement forever. So don't stop taking it. But definitely I recommend getting those levels checked. And then you can do like a D2 or a D3. And again, I recommend usually 2,000 unit, international units a day. But get those levels checked so that you can know the appropriate dose you should be taking.
So that's another thing. If you come to Miles Square and establish a relationship with a primary care doctor, they can walk you through that and do those tests. Is that so?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and you can probably even ask for your doctor that you've been listening to all morning, just to get that kind of information, because it's really so important that you have this relationship and use it. You know that we have facilities in our community, but we need to use them, and not just wait till we got a catastrophe. You know, the best thing to do is to get it checked out along. You know, you wouldn't wait till your car starts putting smoke out the tailpipe before you took it into the mechanic. So why should you wait till you got blood coming out of something or this or that before you get with your primary care doctor, who could have probably given you or had you see someone to inspect you at a time where it would give them some indication there was there were problems, and that you wouldn't have to wait and go through something so great because you waited too late. So any closing words, doctor, before we shut it down for the day?
It's good. It was great being here with you again, Dr. Mason, and just take care of your body. It's the one thing we have. We only get one. So take care of it. Put good things in it on a daily basis. Make sure you're getting your sleep. Make sure you're exercising, getting fresh air, drinking plenty of water, and putting in nutrient-dense foods. But it's been a pleasure being here with you this morning.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. We always have a good time. And you put out a ton of information for people. And again, let's give the phone number and the main address for Miles Square. But the phone number can tell you about all of them. Is that right?
Right. The phone number is 312-996-2000. Again, that's 312-996-2000. And that is the main number for scheduling for Miles Square.
And that, take advantage of it. A lot of people did a lot of work to get those health centers and the federally qualified health centers at that, like Congressman Davis and, you know, Henry Taylor, a lot of people that are doing a lot of things around this. And the new person that's coming, Dr. Kareem Watson, I want to get Kareem and talk to him about some things. But, you know, take advantage. We do this show, make sure you have information. Because the one thing I don't want anybody that listens to my show say, I didn't know. I never heard that. So if you listen regularly, you probably will have heard, this is not the first time we talked about Miles Square, and it won't be the last. So make sure you take advantage of it. Make sure if you got a question, let's give the number one last time, Christina.
It's 312-996-2000.
And use that number, 312-996-2000, correct?
Yes.
And use the number. So I think that's about it. I think if I ask my engineer, I think I'm just a little, am I okay, or I got to... All right. Well, until next week at the same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you, because the next voice you're going to hear is that of our gospel sister, Miss Pam Morris Walton, who's coming to make a joyful noise over the radio. And until next week at the same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with continued health and strength, as I leave you now in peace. And thanks for listening.
The talk of Chicago is 1690 WVON, Sherwin, Chicago.